Watch out for that mistletoe. It's the second Winter Solstice Extravaganza episode of Hidden Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and I've invited past guests from Season 1, percussionist Ari Isomura, clarinetist Whaley Greenishay, and recent guests from Season 2, percussionist Bjorn Greenishay, who collectively co-founded 10th Wave Chamber Collective, based in the Twin Cities, to join me around the fireplace to catch up on their lives since the beginning of the pandemic, as well as further a conversation point during this past Thanksgiving Spectacular episode about entrepreneurship in classical music. In case you missed their episodes, Ari's episode was titled Ari Isomura, It Looked Like a Piano, but Whaley's episode was Whaley Greenishay's The Snail Was Not Consumed, and Bjorn Greenishay's episode is Here's My Chance for Revenge. So welcome around this fireplace we've got, sort of Zoom fireplace, and thank you for joining me all today.
Yay, thanks for having us, Patty.
Yeah, we're glad to be here.
Looking forward to it.
So I'm just curious, I know Bjorn, you're just recently on the podcast and were already telling me about the general upcoming things with 10th Wave, but I'm curious how all of you are doing or how it's been going and just maybe what you're looking forward to or some past highlights of your group.
So we've been having kind of an interesting year coming off of the pandemic. At the beginning of the year, we had, I think, almost 4 to 5 concerts. We got really busy around February all the way until August, just because things with COVID were starting to settle down a little bit. So we were super, super busy from the beginning of the year all the way through the summer. And at the start of our new year, a kind of quote unquote new year starting in September, we decided to kind of take a break and just take a little bit of a breather and regroup and see how we wanted to form our group again. And we all are kind of in different life stages right now. So kind of what we've been doing at the moment is sort of regrouping how we want to structure our group going forward. But we're also class notes artists this year, so we've been going into classrooms to perform. We just did our first performance in Spring Lake Park about mid-November, so we've kind of been busy with that, but again, taking a breather, taking a step back to kind of regroup a little bit.
What was it like to go back into those classrooms?
It was really fun to go in and see the kids. You know, I think as we were preparing to be class notes artists and talking to NPR, you know, they were mentioning to us that a lot of these kids haven't been to a live performance maybe ever, especially the younger kids, but certainly not for the last couple of years. So I think it was really exciting opportunity for them to hear live music and fun for us to have audience again, because, you know, we've had a few concerts with audience, but it's also been a while. So it's been really fun.
Great. And how's the reception from the kids? Can you tell an energy level difference? Or
yeah, they were, what, did we play for 200 sixth graders?
Sixth graders.
Okay. Yeah, so they were being sixth graders. And just typical and a little shy, but also some of them have more opinions to share, which is fun to interact with. There were no hecklers.
Good.
So that was good. And they genuinely seemed interested, even the ones that didn't want to look like it were interested, and it was really nice for them to hear acoustic instruments.
Well, sure.
Something that didn't come out of speakers, and just literally that's what they're hearing. We're not amplified or anything, so.
Well, and probably many instruments that they might not have seen before as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And page-turning foot pedals.
The technology, right.
They were very excited about the page-turning foot pedals.
You know, I was really surprised that some kids figured out what a marimba was. I assumed they would assume it was a xylophone, so I was pleasantly surprised that they knew that.
You know, I wonder if it's because of Animal Crossing.
Fair point.
That's a good point.
I played that so much on that. One of the first things I did was get a marimba from a friend on Animal Crossing.
Right.
And I just played that and got cute clothes, and I think that's all I did on that island.
Okay. Animal Crossing is just this video game that we all got obsessed with around the pandemic lockdown period. Anyway, just for those who might not know video games that well. But all right. Well, are you ready for some snowball questions?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's go.
Latkes or mashed potatoes?
Mashed potatoes?
Mashed potatoes? I don't know what a latke is.
What are latkes?
Oh.
Latke?
Bjorn, do you know what
I do know what it is, but I've never had one, so I have to say mashed potatoes, but I'd love to try one.
Yeah, latkes are like these deep-fried little potato pancakes, and they're particularly Jewish.
Oh.
So, if you get a chance, you should try them. Yeah, they're pretty good. Eggnog or hot chocolate?
Hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate.
Eggnog.
Oh, okay. Peppermint?
Dark chocolate.
Oh, dark chocolate.
Sorry. Okay. Dark chocolate with marshmallows.
So, sorry, that just gave me an image of Overcooked now, yet another game. And like this, yeah, making all the hot chocolate and chopping up all those marshmallows. Oh, man. Bjorn, I don't know how you were able to play that game just by yourself.
I did it.
I don't know how. Takes such mastery. It's anyway.
Lots of stress.
Richardson and I played Overcooked the day before Thanksgiving, just so I can practice cooking.
Did it help?
Yeah, it helped.
It's Were like you throwing food game. Everywhere? In the-
It helped the project management in the kitchen.
I made lots of stuff, but I didn't have two of me, you know?
Right. Peppermint bark or candy canes?
Peppermint bark.
Peppermint sure. bark for sure.
Peppermint bark.
Okay, wow, united. Most hated holiday song?
Oh, the baby it's cold outside?
Santa baby.
I agree. Santa baby is my least favorite. I was going to say that favorite. Too.
I think we can all say Santa baby is hands down the worst.
That one is bad. I remember a piano student told me that's their favorite Christmas carol, and I'm like, it's not. Okay. Well, yeah, we can't play that on the piano.
Both are, like, of those songs have this very, very off-putting sexual innuendo in there that's like, is this really necessary for the holidays? Come on. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Peanut brittle or caramel?
Ooh, they both get stuck in my teeth.
That was the point.
Peanut brittle.
Peanut brittle. That's a hard one.
I think the answer is caramel, because in Minnesota we pronounce it caramel.
Oh, my apologies.
I believe there's an A in there, so it should be caramel.
Thank you, Whaley.
The A silent.
Butter cookies or gingerbread?
Ooh. If in excess, gingerbread.
Gingerbread. I love the spices in there.
Butter cookies.
Okay. If you were playing Secret Santa with a notable composer, who would you want to select and what gift would you give them? This is a big snowball, so.
This is hard.
Do they need to be alive?
No, it could just be anybody.
Oh, okay.
I mean, and you cannot resurrect them. I mean, that's not a gift that you can give. That's the wrong holiday.
Anything? I'd probably give some baby plants to John Cage. Okay. He'd love them. Probably not mushrooms. I don't know if that's good.
Okay. You could give him a guide to safely consuming mushrooms. Wow, that's a hard one. I think I'm going to say Shostakovich, and I'd like to give him a hug.
Yeah, poor guy.
Life was hard. I'll give him a hug.
I'm going to say Prokofiev, and I'm going to give him a sleigh. You know, like a sleigh ride?
Yeah, but I'm trying to put the two, like, what am I missing?
In, I think it's Lieutenant Keechee, the third movement is called Troika.
Right, okay, fair enough.
It's a sleigh ride, I think.
Thank you. Hot toddy or a wassail?
Can you explain what a wassail is?
Okay, so a wassail, so you know like the song, Here We Go A Wassailing? It's like a drinking song of yonder, I guess. And I'm just looking up this random recipe online somewhere. I won't do the proportions. It's apple cider, brown sugar, some wine, Armagnac, orange, apple, lemon, whole cloves, cinnamon sticks, whole allspice, and star anise.
Wow.
And you know what a hot toddy has in there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounds strong. That sounds really good. I'd probably go with a wassail.
Okay.
I think I'm also going to go with the wassail.
Yeah, I think so too. Sounds like a really great apple cider drink.
Have you guys? I've never had one. Have you guys ever had one?
No.
It sounds like it, yeah.
I've had a hot toddy and it was all right.
Yeah. Well, we should definitely experiment and make a wassail and enjoy one together.
Ooh.
Agreed.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Nutcracker or Messiah?
Nutcracker.
Nutcracker. There's some good clarinet parts in there.
Percussion.
Nutcracker for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like I have to acknowledge this, that it's now slightly controversial in some ways of, maybe not the word controversial, but knowing now that Handel was a part of the slave trade and financed it, it puts a weird screen over how we view the Messiah now. But it is still performed all the time around this time of year. So you can't really ignore the piece and art that was made, but you can question the composer behind it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. All right, and what are you most thankful for in 2021?
My wedding in the summer.
Yay! Congratulations, Harry!
Thank you.
And Richardson.
So thankful. Sorry. Yeah, thank you. Yeah,
not only you.
I didn't marry anybody. Just yourself. Yeah, just by myself. No. Yeah, I was just super thankful that it was planned at a perfect time when it didn't seem too anxiety-driven in the summer and people felt comfortable, but we also did everything to keep social distancing and check with vaccine. status with everybody and stuff. So to be able to safely do that, very, very, very grateful.
What was that like? I mean, not everyone got married in this time of year. Was it how much added stress was on top to try to be conscious of this?
Well, because it was COVID, also planning a wedding was a little easier because it was easy for us to limit our guests, and then that would save us money.
Yeah,
that's one thing. Though, you know, we wanted to invite way more people, especially from overseas, because Richardson is from Indonesia. So he would have had a couple dozen more relatives fly over.
Right.
Had it not been the pandemic. But we'll go see them when it's safe.
Are you going to have two weddings?
Do you want to come play cello?
Again?
Yes, everybody here in this gathering was very helpful and instrumental in making the wedding a success. So
all the flower arranging.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
Didn't the florist just kind of sigh at you?
Yeah, she did. She said, "Oh, honey," and then she's going to work for me, I think.
I just cleaned up. I didn't even try.
Anyway, so that's one thing I'm very thankful for in 2021.
I'm very thankful for Bjorn. I think he's been a rock through a lot of really difficult parts of our life this past year. He's a really good dad. He's a really good dad, a really good example for our daughter. So I'm very thankful for him.
Yay! Oh, that's so sweet, guys.
Oh.
I was going to say TikTok, but then I was like, well, that's not very nice.
So now what do I do if I don't say I'm thankful for you?
There's a cap on.
Well, it goes without saying that I'm grateful for Whaley and grateful for our daughter, Elia. But I'm really grateful that we were able to find an opportunity to buy a house this spring.
Yeah, congratulations. In the middle. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
And you too, Harry.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, in the middle of the pandemic, things were so uncertain and we were grateful to have support and income to do that for ourselves when, you know, maybe a year ago or 2 years before that, we never would have thought that was possible. So just to have a space for our family and for Elia to grow up and a backyard to play in and space for us to have our own area in the house has just been great. So I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah. And for Lily to just find any nook and cranny to...
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lots of windows.
Yeah. Nice. Well, you have successfully made it past the snowball fight of Spitfire questions. I don't have a snowball, like, instrument to conclude the segment.
Bjorn, do you have a triangle?
Have a triangle. Wait, I don't want to. I'm scared. I don't want to use my triangle.
Should we have three different triangles going at the same time?
I could give one to Whaley, too. I'm sure I have a couple down here.
I have some bird whistles.
Yeah, it's not going to be a snowball.
Bongos.
Yeah, it's okay.
What's the sound of a snowball?
A thump. I don't know. Anyway, but I did want to ask, give an opportunity for everyone here to answer the questions that they didn't answer in the normal Spitfires of either season. So, Ari and Whaley, can I start you off with answering the current season 2 questions that you didn't get a chance to answer?
Yay! Sure, so let's excited. Do it.
Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
Debussy.
Ravel.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Dogs.
Appetizers or desserts?
Appetizers.
Desserts.
Wow, you guys are not on the same page. Never baller. Okay, sparkling or still water?
Sparkling.
Sparkling.
Yay, finally. Okay, two out of... All right, fan favorite question. Alternate universe musical instrument?
Cello.
Okay, you stuttered.
I got caught. I think cello.
Okay.
Alto flute.
Oh, what?
Yeah, love that Stravinsky.
I think Karen will be proud, except it wasn't contra flute or whatever.
No, I can't do that.
Okay, it's too big.
Too big. I have enough with big instruments. So.
Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, okay. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Both?
Do you sleep?
Lately I'm not sleeping much, but I'm waking up at 7:30 all the time. I have nothing to do, but yeah, so I'm an early bird, but I stay up till like 1, right? So,
okay.
I don't know. Sorry, I shouldn't be talking about these kind of weird health things on this podcast. Weirdly, no, I think it's daylight savings time because it's so bright. So yeah. I think it's, yeah, I'm just an early bird for now.
I see, you're still adjusting, even though this is supposedly around the holidays.
Still adjusting.
pandemic guilty pleasure?
TikTok.
Okay. Do you have your own account, Whaley?
No, I don't make anything. I'm just the creeper that watches a lot of TikTok. Okay. That's all.
Well, I'm sure the content creators appreciate your views. Can I ask what you watch on TikTok?
Yeah, I watch a lot of food videos. Just a lot, like, I just like watching people cook.
Oh.
And cleaning TikToks. That's also weird. I love cleaning. So for me, I find pleasure in clean TikTok.
Okay, I get you.
And Midwestern Minnesota mom.
Oh, yeah, there's a great one where there's this music teacher up in northern Minnesota somewhere. She makes these parodies of Midwestern Minnesotan moms, and it's fantastic.
Okay.
Exotic snacks.
Okay, like yeah. What?
Well, I don't know if it's exotic. I guess it's just not your straight up Ritz crackers or Goldfish or whatever. It's just stuff from Asian grocery stores, or Richardson's Indian Corger got us a bunch of like Indian snacks for Diwali.
Oh, nice.
And stuff like that where I'm like, oh, this is nice. Yeah. So then going out and finding fun snacks.
Yeah. Desert island piece of any genre?
Brahms Clarinet Quintet.
Oh, what a good one. That's up there for me, too.
Yeah, it's probably one of my favorites. So
yeah.
If I had to be confined to an island, that one.
Am I on your island with you, Whaley?
If you would like to be.
Can I play the cello part? Okay.
Can I just say a symphony? Is that bad?
It's fine.
Okay. Another one.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
That's a classic.
Yeah, I'll just listen to it all day.
We can play the two timpani parts.
Well, I'm on Whaley's island, and Bjorn is on Harry's island.
See you guys. Yeah.
I hear the Animal Crossing theme song playing exactly. In my head.
You guys finished the season 2 questions, so Bjorn, now it's you're up to bat with season 1 questions. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Mozart or Beethoven?
Beethoven.
Shostakovich or Prokofiev?
Shostakovich.
Netflix or video games?
Netflix.
Basil or cilantro?
Cilantro.
Nice. Harry Potter, Star Wars, or Lord of the Rings?
Come on. Star Wars.
Symphony or chamber music?
Symphony.
Yeah. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Favorite practice room?
The percussion building at Interlaken.
Oh, what was it like?
It just had lots of windows, and it was when I went to Interlaken in 2005 and 2007, it was like a brand new building, like one of the newest buildings that they built up there. So it just had a lot of instruments, and it was one of my first like major percussion experiences. So I was exposed to a lot of new instruments and a lot of brand new, amazing percussion instruments that I'd never seen before. Like, that's the first time I ever had a chance to play on a 5-octave marimba in my life. Mm-hmm. So like, they just had this wealth of instruments, and here I am like coming out of after 7th grade, this wealth of instruments to play on, and it was amazing.
Nice. Okay. Next piece you'd like to learn?
Oh, I'd like to learn one of the vibraphone parts to the Steve Reich double sextet.
Oh, I'm not familiar with that piece. Is it only percussion or is it mixed ensemble?
Nope, it's a piro plus percussion.
Oh, okay.
But it's interesting because you can play it either with two sextets on stage, or you can record the other one and play it against the recording.
Right. So which would you rather do?
I think playing it live with another sextet would be really cool.
Yeah.
To do 12 musicians on stage. I heard it when I was at Peabody in Baltimore. 8th Blackbird was playing at the University of Maryland, and another percussionist friend and I drove down to University of Maryland and watched them play, and they played it with a student group from University of Maryland on their performance, and it was just a really cool piece. Yeah. I've always wanted to play it.
Maybe hopefully up next for a program for 10th Wave, maybe?
Oh, snap.
I would love to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Okay, we have all finished all kinds of questions, so we can get off the Spitfire Island again.
Yay!
Can I add a pandemic guilty pleasure?
Oh, sure.
Before I said on my own episode, I talked about true crime documentaries.
Yes.
I have to add that I've just dove down the well of podcasts while I've been holed up. A lot of playing video games and listening to podcasts.
I did the same thing. Yeah.
It's so great. I listen to a lot of different podcasts, so that's my guilty pleasure.
Any ones you want to shout out?
Well, of course, yours.
Oh,
Patty.
Well, thank you. I didn't mean for it that way. Thank you.
Somewhat of a controversial figure, but a really interesting podcaster and interesting conversations with a lot of different people, I have to say. Joe Rogan Experience. I love listening to his interviews. That's probably my favorite one. I've been through the pandemic, kind of my source of information has been Dr. Michael Osterholm's The Osterholm Update, talking about COVID every week and just giving really sound scientific advice, which I think is great. Those are the two that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, join the podcast world. No, I've also found, for me, it's been a comfort to have just in the background, just like either intensely listening or even passively listening and just like picking up little things here and there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm the same. Absolutely. One.
Okay, well, now I want to catch up with your guys' outside interests. Eri, how is your manga collection going?
Well, I'd say it has tapered, uh-oh, in a way. It's been a lifelong thing for me, uh-huh, to do that. So, because of COVID, too, it's not like I go to Japan and go through the bookstores. But I go to Chicago, and in the Mitsubo grocery store there, mm-hmm, that's where I also get a ton of snacks. Okay. But also, the bookstore there has plenty of comic books. So, I mentioned the one called Regarding Reincarnated to Slime. That's the
title.
English subtitle to it. So, in Japanese, it's Tensei Shitara Slime Datta Ken. It's the account when I was reincarnated to a drop of slime. So, yeah, there's still a lot to go, so I slowly kind of savor it. Yeah, it's fun to kind of just go through, and always nice to get a new book and then get comfortable and just read and have a little taste of Japanese culture.
Yeah. Whaley, how about you? Any watercoloring?
So since we've moved into our new house and we're kind of settling in, I have not had the chance to sit down and watercolor, but I've been trying to find other creative outlets when I can get a break here and there. So I've colored a little bit on my new tablet, so that's been kind of fun, coloring. Okay. And drawing just random things. And weirdly enough, Animal Crossing kind of gives me that creative outlet. So I kind of revisited the game a little bit. Just, I don't know. It's kind of nice to escape onto an island and
totally
redesign everything. So I'm trying to find creative outlets here and there where I can, but I'm hoping as we get more settled into our house and things like that, I can finally revisit my watercoloring.
Yeah, and I don't mean to say that you must be doing, like, what you said on the podcast to, like, find that, as you say, creative outlet. Also, like, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to, as I'm not a mother, but to be raising a child is definitely first priority anyway. And probably you gain a lot of creativity and imagination from her as well.
That's true. We do color a little bit, or we're trying to teach her how to color, so we're doing that together.
Nice. And how about you, Bjorn? Any updates since, I don't know, a couple weeks ago about Star Wars?
A few things. So the first one is I'm really excited that this series called The Book of Boba Fett is kind of a spinoff of the show The Mandalorian, following Boba Fett and Fennec Shand, played by Ming-Na Wen, which looks amazing. It's coming out at the end of December, so I'm super pumped about that. Not too much else new. You know, one thing I've been doing with our daughter Elia is trying to, like, incorporate as many, like, little Star Wars things for her that I possibly can. So she has like a little Baby Yoda Grogu stuffed doll that we've been like,
aww,
I've been putting in her bed at night and she's been sleeping with, and she can say Grogu.
Oh.
So that's part of her vocabulary, which is excellent. Yeah, we've got a number of like Star Wars books and things, so I've been trying to like feed her a steady diet of Star Wars words and things. So probably still a few years away from even watching some of the like kids animated Star Wars shows, but that's my Star Wars update.
Yeah, you're like slowly but surely infusing her with all the lore and everything.
That's right.
Is that okay, Whaley?
Yeah. Actually, I was going to add that it's really funny, the new generation of Star Wars fans, so to speak. She has this little Star Wars kids book, and on the front is a picture of Yoda, and we all know it's Yoda. But she looks at it and she says, Grogu, because she thinks she doesn't know who Yoda is yet, right. So she just knows Grogu. But,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
And she has Grogu wild pajamas. She can point Grogu a mile away, and she can say, night night, Grogu, like, really well.
Yeah, she has a little, like, nightlight in her room that's a little statue of Baby Yoda or Grogu, so we taught her to say, night night, Grogu. Grogu and tap him on the head before she goes to bed at night.
Oh,
yeah. That's so cute.
That's very cute. Yeah. Well, I don't know how else to conclude this other than let's take a break and then let's reconvene and talk about our next topic, which is entrepreneurship in music. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Sounds yeah good. I gotta
okay
pee.
Oh, okay. We'll be right back. Welcome back from the break. So before I forget, normally the guests I invite for these big shows, there's multi-guests, I like to give you guys these little gift boxes as an additional thank you, but also they're intended to be used on the podcast, but I didn't have time this time to actually get them organized and ready for today. And since you guys live in town, later this week or so, I'm going to find a time to deliver some little boxes for you guys that will include some more, you know, podcast paraphernalia, including whatever you can find on our shop or...
Ooh.
Maybe I'll get some ingredients for a wassail and we can all try it together.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Yeah, I can't really send booze to people, so
bonus episode.
Yes.
We'll have to get together and drink a wassail and record a podcast.
But Ari, I'm putting you on the spot because the last time we all hung out together was for Whaley's birthday and we were admiring the fire pit at Centro, the restaurant. Uh-huh. Did you guys end up buying one?
We got it yesterday.
Oh my God! That's exciting! Okay, so we're going to Ari's and we're going to have wassails.
That sounds good. And maybe just one and no more than one.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good. All right.
Yeah, now they're nice fire pits. I'm really excited.
Have you tried it yet? Or I guess you just got
No. We ordered it yesterday. And Honey had a $50 coupon. So we saved some $50. Money.
Nice.
Got a deal on that 31-inch fire pit. So.
Wow. Okay.
To our patio. Better come.
I'm going to invite myself over all the time.
Okay.
Okay. So, on the latest Thanksgiving Spectacular episode with violist Ivo Bokulik and trumpeter Ari Mishik, we are discussing what freelance life looks like as a musician and how it's a collection of many different jobs strung together and many different hats that we wear. There was one point that we touched on that I wanted to elaborate further, which is the topic of entrepreneurship in the arts. How does someone take a good idea and create an incredible organization from thin air? Now that I'm gathering founders of 10th Wave Chamber Collective together, I want to open the conversation with an obvious question. How did this all start?
So I had just come back from being at school out east. I guess kind of all three of us had at some point. We're all out east at some point and found ourselves back here in Minnesota. And we got together with the idea of starting something new and we didn't know what that was going to be.
Like, was it just one person that said it in one off thing? Like, oh, wouldn't it be great if? Or was it an actual really like, no, I really want to do something, you know, or how offhand was it?
It slowly came together, but within a few months, because I came back here in 2016 and then Bjorn showed up 2017 and I was like, oh, you're back in town. So some listeners might know Bjorn and I had the same percussion teacher here in Minneapolis, Bob Adney. Hey, Bob.
So it's all his fault. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, so we got lunch.
We're and like, Whaley was here.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start a new music group. Let's do it.
Music group or just contemporary music? Like new as in brand new? Like or
Or
new as in new music?
New music. Okay. Genre of new music group. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we very loosely knew what we, like, had an idea of what we wanted to do. Whaley and I had talked about it, had many conversations about it, even before we moved back to Minnesota, being out of school, just saying, we both love chamber music. New music is cool and interesting. We didn't know if we exclusively wanted to play new music at that point. But yeah, then we met Ari for lunch and said, well, let's talk about doing something. We don't know exactly what yet, but let's do something fun. Play music that we want to play. Play with people that we want to play with. Be our own bosses. Do what we want to do.
Well, I think when Bjorn and I kind of moved back here, we had talked about, again, kind of going off of what he said, we talked about wanting to do something. And we came up with a concert program, which was actually Conflict Perseverance. And I think we brought this to Ari. And then we all three of us kind of slowly went from there. And again, we did not know what we really wanted this to look like quite yet. It took a couple of months for that to really launch. And I think it's still kind of a in progress thing. I think we'll always kind of be trying to figure out what it is that we want.
Yeah, well, I think that's evolution, right? I mean, that's what you do in any organization is stretch your boundaries in some way.
Yeah, I think evolve is the right phrase because, like, you look at what you're doing or adapt, maybe. Like, you're looking at what you're doing and seeing what works and seeing what doesn't and trying to make it better to accomplish your goal. And so we've sat down a number of times as a group to, like, figure out what our mission is or what our vision is. And we just revisited it and came up with a new one recently. And we looked back at, like, what we had originally written. And I think that's changed a lot. But Whaley, I didn't remember that we had come up with idea first and then said, let's just play a concert and then start the group. Yeah. I didn't remember that was how it came about.
Yeah, I was going to say that's actually interesting that it was the topic rather than, oh, let's just kind of jam together. Because what ended up, at least of my experience of either watching 10th Wave or being a musician in the ensemble, is that there was a theme attached to every concert. Yeah, so it became kind of the style of how you guys would even program or what intent was behind each piece, which is not always the case in a lot of programming. Sometimes it's just, oh, we just like these pieces and let's just put them together in an organized way that, you know, that kind of programming. So it's very purposeful of the message that you're trying to get across.
Yeah, and I think that's what what we were trying to do in the beginning. And I think that's what we still want to do. But I think, again, kind of going along the lines of evolving, I think we're also looking to expand that. So not every concert has to be themed. I think it's really cool when we can do that because it is really purposeful. But there's also something to be said for expanding that to just play music that we want to play for the sake of music.
So your earliest expectations for 10th Wave was, let's just put this program together. Let's have it at Studio Z and see who shows up, kind of thing? Or was there a little bit more of a thought, like a longer trajectory? Was there a season planned?
No. By that time, I think I was already writing grants for Hill House Jammer Players, and Minnesota is known for having a lot of arts grant opportunities, and so that made us more comfortable inviting our peers that are professional musicians to join us on the roster, and so we can pay them a fair wage and try to make it a standard good concert that people like playing for and being a part of. But wait, the first one, we didn't have a grant.
No, that was the first. We're not thinking of having a season. We just wanted to put on a concert and start this group and see where it went from there, I think, was the idea.
Yeah. So
like see a response from it, to see if people were showing up or even praising, right? That kind of idea, like a tester.
Yeah, I think we all knew that we wanted to do something long term, but yeah, it was a test. Let's put on a concert. Let's put on music that we enjoy. Let's find a through line through that music. Let's play music that's mostly accessible to any listeners, new music, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think Whaley's the one that had the most vision for like what's going to turn into, because it was so program based. She already had like so many things up her sleeve. By the time we started, we're just like, oh, well, let's hang out and play music. And then, you know, the first concert at Studio Z was this wonderful production that included narration and everything in between, so that it's not just a concert of classical music or modern music, just instrumental music, and then clap, and then, you know, sit and clap and go home. It was narration, everything tied together. It was just like more of an experience of such. And I think that spoke a lot. It spoke very strongly to everybody that was there. So I think that was a really cool experience. And yeah, like before that, we actually had a tiny little thing at Red Sea, this little dive bar in the U of M. Well, Ashley and I played. We had our first photo shoot. Remember, Bjorn with your mom?
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
Oh, man. But anyway, yeah, we were just trying to look all cool. And like, here's our like cool chamber music photo. And yeah, we tried to make it hip, and we're like, okay, well, we can perform anywhere. It'll be like Classical Revolution, or just have the idea of we don't have to be in a concert hall all the time. And so we had that tiny little gig like maybe a month before.
I think after
the Studio Z one.
It was after.
Was it after, or was it before? After.
It was right after. Yeah. So those couple stints happened in the very beginning, and then we started to put the Conflict and Perseverance program. We established more of that into the next year's programming, right?
The first season, yeah. And actually, yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Bjorn.
I was just going to say, so I'm trying to put a timeline to this. So I think we met to talk about forming the group. We had lunch in like fall of 2017, and that concert was in February of 2018. Mm-hmm. And then we played a few gigs through the summer. We played at a couple of summer festivals. We played at a couple of local summer festivals. We played at, Ari mentioned, Red Sea. There was another one called Underground Music Cafe. A few other things. Go ahead.
What? No! Yes! Sorry, I'm laughing before everybody knows about this.
So this was...
I just gave Penny so much crap for this.
I gave myself crap for it. No, I'm so sorry, because this is just an infamous story with me and Ari, at least, because that's, I knew her best at the moment, but... Of course, I became a little fan.
Is that April? Yeah.
Yeah. And I went to the Underground Cafe concert, as well as the first concert. This was before I was even playing with you guys. And I came out to support you guys, and I decided to order a chai latte, not iced, like a hot one, which, you know, if you're in a coffee shop, you have to steam the milk. So during one of the performances of, I can't remember which piece it was, but like all of a sudden there's like, and I was like, no, stop. I couldn't stop it. And I was like, Ari, I'm so sorry. I just ruined your performance. I really needed that chai latte.
It was so loud.
It was so loud. I know. And I think it was probably a quieter piece too. So anyway, when you said that, it just reminded me of that moment. I just can't live it down, and so guilty.
That's amazing. But I think at least one of the driving things for me in the beginning, and one of the things that the ideas that we talked about, was changing the concert experience from the normal setting of going to a concert in a recital hall, sitting there, clapping in between pieces. And we were like, you know, we want to reach people that might not have heard this music before in any sense of the word. And so that's why we were trying to play at a lot of a variety of different places, playing at summer festivals, playing at breweries, playing, yeah, sure, in a concert hall too, but trying to expand that. And that was one of our driving ideas from very early on.
I think one key thing that we're missing from this timeline is Ashley, who is also one of the co-founders and really integral to this part. She came on board for our first concert in February, and since then she's been a very integral part of forming this group too. But I also wanted to add that we did a lot of really fun concerts that summer. From the first couple of months that we formed, we were quite busy, actually. You know, we had our first concert at Studio Z, then Red Sea, and then Underground Music Cafe, Black Dog Cafe, Boom Island Brewing Company.
Stone Arch Music Festival.
Highland Music Festival. And those are really fun experiences because we were really, really trying to fulfill our mission of bringing music in really unconventional places to make it really accessible for anyone to hear. So those are really fun experiences. Now, it was not fun trying to assemble a marimba in 90-degree weather, but, it was really fun. And a lot of people that probably wouldn't normally go to a concert came and listened to us outside in the heat, and it was really fun.
Other than just having these little concerts here and there, what kept the snowball rolling, you know, for the sake of the theme of the episode?
I think after having played those first few concerts and having, you know, a few experiences under our belt as a group, understanding what we wanted to do going forward. So I think it was that summer that we must have written a grant and received a grant to form essentially what was our following season, which was four concerts that we played throughout the course of the year. And at that point, we had an idea of what we wanted to be, this idea that we were making music accessible to a lot of people by playing music that was accessible to listen to. Playing a lot of new music at times, of course, can be to a listener that maybe has never heard contemporary classical music. Some of that music can be really challenging on the ear. So we tried to play music that was easier to listen to, and then making a theme through those different concert ideas. And those were kind of the pillars that I think we built ourselves on from early on for that first season, which was then fall of 2018 through spring, summer of 2019.
Mm-hmm. So up until this grant, you didn't really have that much funding before, right? Or there was other little avenues for funding, ticket sales or whatnot?
Yeah, that's right. I think the first concert, we just paid folks whatever we made at the door in ticket sales. Mm-hmm. For that concert. And then we got paid a little bit from some of the festivals that we played at, but not a lot. And I think for some of the like restaurant, bar, brewery gigs, we just paid people whatever we made in tips. Mm-hmm. And then realized, well, if we want to keep hiring our friends and paying them a decent wage for a concert, we're going to need more funding. And then Ari had experience in writing grants already, and that was a huge bonus to us to have her experience to help us understand what we needed to do to secure more funding if we wanted to build a first season of concerts.
So yeah, I mean, maybe this is a good opportunity to start talking about grant writing, because that's something that is definitely not taught. Hopefully it's being taught more at the collegiate level. I mean, if you don't have financial stability in any business, then the longevity of any business outside of music is going to fail, right? So it's such an integral part of what we do outside of our creativity of playing our instruments, right? I'll turn to Ari if you want to talk a little bit about what your experiences are with grant writing, or I guess any insight that you might have. I mean, this also could honestly be a whole other topic on its own, like on another panel.
Yeah, definitely not in music school. You have to just learn everything while you do it. So the first grant that we applied for was through the Metropolitan Regional Arts Council, which was an organization that I had already written for another ensemble that needed funding. And I learned just by the resources that they have, arts organization, administrative organizations, like that council, the Arts Council, or the Springboard of the Arts. So there are all these, you know, nonprofit organizations that help other performing groups or artists try to figure out how to be an artist and stay an artist. And so those organizations are always ready to reach out and help. And one of the main ways I learned was becoming a panelist for a grant. And by being a panelist, you get like 25 or so grant applications from other people that applied for a specific one, and you have to rank them.
and comment on them. And there are all these very specific criteria of the way that they wrote the grant and how you can tell that they're going to be able to do the grant. And it's not really about whether you agree with it or not, because everybody has their own way. Or, you know, if you're not in the Irish community of Minnesota, you know, you can still be okay evaluating the grant. You know, you don't have to be representative of that.
Mm-hmm. So it can be all kinds of creatives, not just like classical music only. Like, is essentially what you're saying, like dancers and filmmakers,
yep.
Right? All kinds of backgrounds. Yeah.
All kinds. And a lot of them are, because it's a regional arts grant, it's really more community based as well. So then it's just as much important of who you're affecting and how you are impacting the community, as well as the purpose behind your art. So in a way, it trained me to have a keen eye, I guess, or, you know, just train and making sure I can write a grant that reads like one and yeah. One that would work well with the evaluation. So if anybody is writing a grant, I do strongly suggest reading other ones and then looking through the criteria of how a panelist would evaluate, and especially in the genres that you don't know at all, because how are you supposed to know how these groups function? And there are panelists that aren't musicians that are evaluating musician grant applications. Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to write it so that people outside the genre have an idea. And I think having a purpose and a very coherent or cohesive program for 10th Wave really helped in shaping a really strong grant.
Right. Because you were focused already with a concept. Mm-hmm.
And also that because 10th Wave is mostly Asian American, it had a portion of representation that is really big, and we think is important too for us to have Asian American leadership in the arts. And that's not something that you see much of. We do want to highlight that. We also want to make sure that what we do is impactful and it is a part of the community, not just something that we're doing on our own and then right. We hope people show up. It has to be something that people want.
Well, and also for most grants, it's taxpayer dollars that are funding these grants, so that's why it's so important that it has to be embedded in the community in some way. No, we're actually trying to build the community with the music and with their representation and all the things that you're discussing.
Exactly.
So it's definitely a two-way street. I mean, again, I could be another episode on talking just about grant writing, but were there any other financial either hurdles or ways that you were able to fund these projects other than grants?
I think we're still figuring out that other part right now, to sure. Be completely transparent. I think that's, we had a recent meeting discussing, you know, the balance between how much is coming from grant writing and how much is coming from donors. And there's a whole other episode you could have talking about development and fundraising and how to get anybody to just give your group money outside of just your close circle of friends and family who want to do it because they care about you, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think the through line here is just, at least I had to learn grant writing. I didn't know anything about it, and learn the financial side of things and understand how to do bookkeeping and accounting and make sure that you're in line with the tax code, and how to do bookkeeping for a business, and just things like, you know, Whaley can speak to this, contacting your personnel and keeping a rehearsal schedule and managing all of the other parts of this that we didn't learn in school and had to just learn on the fly very frantically in some cases. Mm-hmm. So those were certainly some other hurdles that we've had to work through and still do.
So what did you have to quickly learn? I remember you guys were speaking, for instance, that Springboard for the Arts was one of your fiscal sponsors.
That's right. So I think one of the first things we had to learn in order to even apply for the grants or to get any kind of funding was to be fiscally sponsored, and that requires you to register mm-hmm. as a sole proprietorship with the IRS, and it requires a lot of paperwork and back-end things. It's not too bad, but you know, those are things that we don't learn in school, how to establish yourself as a business first and then apply for a fiscal sponsorship, how to handle a budget, how to do marketing, how to put up a website for a group, how to handle social media. And I'm kind of speaking to the very first couple months of us beginning this group. Library rentals. I had no idea anything about library rentals. That was all airy. I didn't know that we had to pay yeah. such extravagant amounts for new music. That's like a huge hurdle that I think was unexpected.
Because at school, it's provided for you because the school has already done all that work for you, right?
Right, exactly. You don't think about these things when you're in school. And mm-hmm. I played in a lot of new music ensembles in school throughout all my schooling, and I never once thought about how expensive it was. We programmed a David Lang piece in our first season, and that rental alone was, what, $600 to $800? Is that right? Yeah.
Something like that.
So those are things that are unexpected. Making sure how to you know, give a tax deductible letter to the donor, how to thank you donors, or how to keep track of taxes. The first fiscal year where we filed for taxes, we had one huge mistake where we didn't realize like accepting money at the end of the fiscal year or the IRS year would cause us to pay a lot of income tax. So we ended up having a really big bill when we filed our first fiscal year. So lots of things that you have to learn very, very quickly.
Were there resources for you guys to have? I mean, of course, there's mistakes all along the way that teach you in the unfortunate way of actually making said mistake. But were there other resources around that were able to help?
I want to give a huge shout out to Springboard for the Arts, because when they were our fiscal sponsor, they would answer any question that we had very, very quickly. So for example, that tax issue that I kind of briefly mentioned, you know, they were super helpful, called us immediately on the phone. They're very, very helpful. Other than that, Google is your best friend. I don't really know what else to say. Google, Reddit, Minnesota Nonprofit Council is also another great resource.
Just working with other ensembles helped me. I work as a librarian, a music ensemble, part-time librarian. And so the whole thing about renting music and syncing rights, mechanical rights, royalties through ASCAP, that stuff, that was all through working with the Wayzata Symphony Orchestra and the National Repertory Orchestra. And being librarian for those ensembles not only gives you that information of what you need to do, but also the self-motivation or being proactive to do those things. No one's going to tell you to do them, but you have to do them or else it's wrong. So you have to seek it out. And for me, a resource was just knowing people that have done it before.
And so I just want to clarify, can you clarify mechanical rights and syncing rights?
Yeah, so mechanical rights come into play for rentals and also purchase music. So the song owner, i.e. the composer, is still alive or is still under copyright restriction, then you have to pay somebody or you owe something to someone.
To their family.
In order to publicly perform, you know, and if you're going to record, then especially you have to communicate with the composer themselves. So a lot of new music ensembles, even they don't have fees or, you know, just really official things like that, because they're literally just hanging out with the composer and the composer just writing them the work. But if the work is already existing, like David Lang's piece or Missy Mazzoli's piece, then they work with a publisher and the publisher is going to give you an invoice. So mechanical rights, rental fee, and then syncing rights, that's a thing for streaming online. And if you want to stream for how long and if you're going to profit from streaming, you know, that's a whole agreement separate from the rental.
Right. I think that's actually a huge point. I mean, for people who are maybe social media influencers and stuff and might want to play excerpts of or things like this, that's something that they need to know. And that's not, again, not often taught in music school.
Yeah.
You're just kind of used to, I'm just going to do this clip as I'm practicing. But it's like, no, wait, you actually have to kind of consider these things. You might get caught in a way, you know, because it's out there. Yeah.
And some publishers are more strict about it than others. Some countries are more strict about it than others. If you put dance or theater to a music, then that's grant rights. So that's a whole nother thing too. So those kind of things you learn with library work. And
like just through the job you did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think for, you know, students that work for ensemble libraries might be running into that, or interns for Tanglewood or Aspen or whatever would also run into that as well.
I wanted to add kind of one other thing. I had a conversation with a friend. She runs an orchestra, but we were kind of having a conversation about how difficult it is to perform new works, especially you're trying not to play Beethoven all the time or Mozart all the time. You want to play this new music because it deserves to be heard. It's really hard publishers want to charge you these amounts and you're this really small organization that doesn't have a budget of over $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah, like a huge orchestra, mainstream.
Exactly. Yeah. So it makes it hard to bring this new music to light if, you know, these groups don't have the funding or the prices are so extravagant. So I guess without trying to get into a deep rabbit hole or soapbox, getting on a soapbox here, I'm hoping down the road publishers can have a little bit more grace because, you know, it's getting difficult to put this new music out there when it's so expensive.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the process is somehow uneven for some reason. And I don't think that composers and publishers should be paid any less. It's just the artists have to scrounge out all this money. And I mean, we can't even start talking about access here, you know, like the people that want to perform it can't even rent it, you know? So maybe it's a resource thing and an issue of how if publishers need the money to support their distributions and be able to do that for artists, then there should be maybe even a third party that could support that activity so that performers don't have to be so constrained or restricted because of these high fees.
That's certainly a huge hurdle, and especially, as you're saying, for a contemporary ensemble such as 10th Wave. With this resurgence of trying to be inclusive and reaching out to different new composers that aren't the dead white composers, as what we, you know, we always say these days, I'm hopeful that things will change, because otherwise, how can we have access, right? And it's not, again, maybe that's, again, another whole episode on just trying to get things to be a little bit more even, or at least for the musicians who want to play this music to have some kind of reduced fee at some level or something like that. But yeah, all the answers can't be answered on today's episode, unfortunately. But another thing to consider along the way is also rental fees of halls and rental fees of tech, any of that sort of thing. Have you guys run into issues with finding places to play?
Yeah, I mean, rentals for venues, especially when you're trying to book a nice recital hall or a performance hall, can certainly be expensive. I think maybe one of the benefits of what we were trying to do early on of performing in bars and breweries and restaurants and things is there was little to no rental fees for playing there. And I think it helped us get the word out for what we were doing. I think some places and venues are willing to negotiate if you're a new group that's just coming up, especially if they're a place that's maybe understanding and trying to just support the arts wherever you are, instead of trying to make money on their rentals. If they're an organization that says, you know, we're just trying to support the arts in the area, we have this recital hall, we'd love for people to come perform here, and maybe there's some negotiating room, and we found that a bit too. But that certainly can be a hurdle.
I think the fact that we are playing local and we have a wider reach or a bigger network of people we know around town and musicians that work for churches and they have venues, or, you know, other musicians that run their own ensembles like Studio Z, like those are all from personal connections. Once the pandemic hit, it was nearly impossible to find a venue that would take us.
But that's also like totally understandable because of we wanted to reduce the spread of COVID. Now, though, things are, you know, we are still in a pandemic, but people are getting hopefully getting vaccinated and wearing masks. And, you know, we know a little bit more about the virus than we did at first with lockdown. So, but I know that during the time you had a little bit of a residency at Oak Knoll.
Yep. So we were able to, thanks to Bobby Ragunanen, the Oak Knoll music director, was able to help us out by providing a venue for not only a concert, but also a recording of our dance collaborative performance that was just a live broadcast on YouTube. So there's collaborators that are willing to help, and there are so many people around here that want to help us out and make this all happen. Just make a lot of friends.
Well, but that is
because if we pay the real fee, the real rental fee of concert halls with good sound and a piano that's in tune, it skyrockets right away.
And I wanted to say that that's also a huge part of the music business or field or whatever you want to call it, is just having friends. It's like what people call networking, right? Like, again, not necessarily something that was taught in music school, even though it was like passively taught, because of course we're going to make friends, but it's not something necessarily that is spoken in a way that's like, well, you have to treat people well. You also have to be respectful and help people when they are in need, and hopefully that will reciprocate back to you when you are in need of something. These seem to be like fundamental basics, but there is a stereotype of this crazed musician out there of, you know, like unbearable to work with and stuff like that, that, you know, sometimes it is unfortunately true. So yeah, I guess I just wanted to make that point as well.
I feel like the lesson here is, you know, even if you're not friends with everybody where you're going to school or where you went to school or who you're working with, certainly do whatever you can not to burn those bridges, because you never know when that person might be working for the organization that you're trying to rent a performance hall from, or maybe working for the publisher that you're renting music from, or is the whatever instrument that you're trying to hire for your next concert, and they're your last call on the night before the performance, and you were a jerk to them, so now they're not going to play with you. Like, I think it's such an important lesson to just be kind to people.
Yeah.
And not burn those bridges, because you just never know.
Right. So I want to move a little bit forward in the timeline of things, because as I was surprised to hear, and I apparently was the only one to be surprised about it at Whaley's party, that 10th Wave is now a 501c3 organization.
Yeah.
Yay.
We're super excited. Woo-hoo! It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, so oftentimes organizations like 10th Wave will do a lot of paperwork to then become a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So then private donations can be tax deductible, which is huge. That opens up a lot more of a donor base and a hopeful, you know, support from the community for more and more opportunities to program more concerts outside of grant writing, because there's only an X amount of grants that you can apply for, even within a certain year or a year range. So can you tell me what that process was like?
Yeah, I can jump in. I was going to add something else. The other benefit to us moving to nonprofit, we were able to accept tax-deductible donations through our fiscal sponsorship and apply for grants. We were still able to kind of function sort of as a nonprofit, but what really gets in the way is the amount of admin fees that our fiscal sponsor takes from our donations and any grant funding that we get. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty sizable. Mm-hmm. And of course, they need it for their administration fees. So I'm not saying anything against that. But yeah, that is like a sizable, right, 7%, 5 or 7% fee. But moving to nonprofit gives us more freedom to take these donations directly. We can now apply for more grants because there are a lot of grants out there that also don't accept fiscally sponsored groups. So that also, right, opens up a lot of roads for us. But kind of going in the process of it, it's a long process because you really have to dig deep down and see where you want this group to grow in 5 to 10 years. It involves establishing a board of directors. So that's something that we had to find people that could advise us in running our organization, coming up with bylaws. And this was tricky too, because we were thinking, again, rules that we needed to follow 5, 10 years down the road. We also, right, had articles of incorporation. Again, things you have to think about long term, because these are rules that cannot be changed unless you want to pay a fee to change it. But the other big part of it is it's quite a sizable fund to even become a nonprofit. So you put in all this time and paperwork, but you're paying a sizable fund to pay for the paperwork to go through. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of steps to kind of jump through. A lot of the application asks for, again, things that you're going to think about 5, 10 years down the road. You know, are you going to sell products? Are you going to sponsor anyone else or something like that? So these, mm-hmm. you know, it's easy to file paperwork, but it's harder to think about where you want to see your group in 5 to 10 years or longer.
Yeah, I think lots of paperwork, lots of things to take into consideration. So nothing of making sure that our language was like legally proper. So we were lucky to have a lawyer who's a member of our board that's able to help us make sure that everything legally makes sense in all the paperwork that we're filing. So that's very helpful to have. But again, you know, talking about a board, that's something that I certainly didn't know much or anything about. And I'm still learning about how to engage them properly and how to utilize their different areas of expertise in assisting our group. You know, that's another piece that's a challenge. But yeah, I mean, we're really, really excited to have that. I think just having that label of 501c3 legitimizes you as a business and as a group that's in it for the long haul.
What were some unexpected problems or decisions that you had to make?
I think a lot came from writing the bylaws, I want to say, because we had to determine where the four co-founders kind of sat. So the four of us right now are permanently on the board of directors with unlimited terms. So that was kind of unexpected, and kind of determining the number of people we wanted our board. And there were a lot of rules that I didn't think we had to think about, such as voting rules, who gets to vote, what is determined as a majority vote, what is quorum. The other unexpected thing was a dissolution clause, thinking about what would happen if we decided to end 10th Wave. We have to decide in writing what is going to happen.
But that will never be.
That will never happen.
I think another unexpected challenge was just deciding amongst the four of us, like, what roles that we want to have and how to divvy up the work on the back end. You know, because we get into this because we're excited about playing and putting on concerts and making a difference. But like we've talked about, there's a lot of work that happens on the back end. So going through the four of us, deciding how to divvy up the work, figuring out the type of work that each of us enjoys or tends to be good at, or at least doesn't hate, is a challenge. And I think will continue to be a challenge for any group that wants to go down this road, and something to determine fairly early on in the game of what are you good at? What are our strengths? How do you work well together? What areas are you interested in? That's always been a challenge for us.
Communication's hard, especially if we don't talk about everything all the time. Like, especially because we have four leaders, we want to make decisions together. So we're all feeling good about it. And we'll take all the time we need to make sure that we do that. And everybody feels good about how concerts go. And I mean, because of time, and some of it is like, okay, well, that's how we'll do it then. You know, we just run out of time. And it's okay, because we're all very busy. I mean, we're all musicians. We have three or four other jobs, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
So we do need to talk about it. We can't really afford to do anything for free. And so that's a part that I think a lot of performing artists or like even, you know, institutions don't really teach. It's like you can't just like pour in hours and hours and expect to get paid for all of it. You need to design the life you want now. And if you don't have enough time for certain things, you don't have time. And you have to make those decisions on your own. You can't like blame other things for taking your time if you decided to do something because you thought that it needed all of your attention, all of your soul, and like it just consumed all of you. You're responsible for your own time to be able to make that decision and make those boundaries for yourself. And I think music school doesn't teach about boundaries. You have to learn how to be yourself and, you know, be who you want to be. And then come the projects and stuff that shape your life. There's an element of, especially because it's teamwork, you know, it's not just like each individual's brainchild and like it's what that individual wanted. It's everybody's work. So then the way that you would put responsibility on yourself and on other people, the balance of that and communicating that and doing that respectfully and doing that amongst friends too. We're not business people first, we're friends first. And right. Like, in a way, I think it could easily turn sour or relationships can have a harder time if communication is not prioritized. So I think in that, like, there are always here and there, there's always stuff that just needs to be talked through. And like, we just have to make sure we're all on the same page, but we're all very busy. And, you know, 10th wave is not the highest priority for any of us. Like, we all have to do other stuff too, but then it comes together with our powers combined. We can do this amazing thing.
Yeah.
So the difficult parts are there are still to come because we're at a point in our group where we have to depend on certain funding. We have to really structure the way that we're going to run things so that everybody feels right about it. And it's life-giving. It's life-giving more than soul-consuming, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, passion is important to do what you want to do and, like, have purpose behind the way that you reach your community, the way that you are fulfilled in your relationships, in your life. So if it's going to be sustainable, too, if the project is too large, it's going to take over eventually. And, I mean, I'm not saying that it's, like, this out-of-control monster or anything like that. We're the ones that are making it work. So if we don't have the sustainability aspect of it, I think I just see so many performing groups that just don't make it because they burn out or
yeah.
Things change. Life happens. Pandemic.
Yeah, pandemic happens. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're trying to approach it in a way where it can be a part of our lives and we still can work through it with our passion of music and performing and building relationships. So
I guess I kind of want to jump on that too. I think kind of talking about starting a group, it's very passion based. And I think with any business owner that you talk to, a lot of businesses that start up, you don't get paid or you don't make a sizable income. It's a lot of sacrifices though for the first couple of years. But I do think there is a point where you do deserve some payment and you have to work towards that for the sustainability. Otherwise, you do face burnout because there is a point where this work gets to be really hard. And if you're not getting compensated for it, it's not going to be sustainable. And I wish that was taught more in music school, which is that we do deserve to be paid for our passion. We absolutely do. We wouldn't continue to take free gigs out of passion. We have to make a living. We're still musicians that have gone through years and years of training. We deserve to be paid. And I think the same can kind of be said. And I'm not saying that's the first couple years that you actually get paid, but down the road, I don't think it's a wrong mindset to expect that we get paid for our passion. If you talk to any other profession, they probably say the same thing. We have just as many years of experience doing something. But I guess sometimes I feel that there's this mindset that music school gives or society gives that creatives should be doing things for passion and not for monetary gain. But at the end of the day, right. We need to make money for the value that we're putting in. So I do wish that that was a mindset that maybe wasn't so enforced in society or our schools. It's not beneficial to keep taking free gigs, you know, like we gotta get paid, right. Gotta put food on the table.
Yeah.
I think it's constantly fighting the age-old kind of cultural assumption that all artists or everybody's an artist and it can be a hobby and we're doing it for fun. So that's our payment. Fulfillment is our payment. Or like emotional fulfillment, spiritual fulfillment is our payment. And it's like, So a little twist to that is how we also feel unprepared asking people to pay us.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
We have this like, I don't know, I have severe imposter syndrome with that. If I'm hanging out with a bunch of people that work for corporate, it's like money just looks so different in different circles. And I think when we're just trying to figure out how are we going to fund this concert, and we're proud of what we're doing, but why do we need to keep asking our friends for money? And then like the guilt behind that, or like being a salesperson by talking to people and they haven't even heard a note from you. You know, they've never heard you play, but you have to talk about it and convince them that it's amazing because it is, but
right.
Right.
I definitely really tongue-tied when it comes to asking. Yeah. I mean, and it's something that every business has to do. It's like, but why do we feel as musicians shy to do that? You know, it's like part of creating, I mean, everything is business. I don't know. It just seems like.
That speaks to how orchestras and stuff are having struggles with management relationships, you know, or ensembles, musicians not getting along with their management and all that stuff with money. And there's a disconnect. And when we have to, as freelance or, you know, entrepreneur role artists, you have to do all of it yourself, mm-hmm. and agree within yourself of what you're doing.
Yeah.
I wanted to put a name to what Ari was saying, starving artist complex. I think mm-hmm. we're kind of fighting that. Yeah. A lot of us, orchestras, chamber, like any individual artist, we're fighting that starving artist complex too, of passion and fulfillment will feed us because art is a hobby, quote unquote. And that's just not true. And I think we all fight that complex that maybe a lot of corporations have, where, you know, art is supposed to be a hobby and passion will feed you, but we deserve monetary fulfillment too, just like any other profession.
We just have to build that structure for ourselves. Because there's no HR.
Right. What advice would you give to someone wanting to establish their own group? Or what advice did you wish you had before starting 10th Wave?
Buckle up for the ride. It's a long one.
I think for me, I think it would have been spend more time talking to connections you have, established groups that you already know that have been through it, that know everything. Here's how you learn about finance. Here's how you learn about grant writing. Here's how you learn about fundraising, development. Here's how you learn about how to market yourself on social media. Like all those things, I think we've learned by doing by the seat of our pants. And I wish I had spent more time calling my friends and connections that I had, and, you know, just your music network that you know, that you meet in school, that you know through other people, that you know through your teacher. I think that is something I wish I would have done more of, and I still hope to continue to do as we continue to build, to reach out to friends and connections about how to do things.
So I want to bring up a distilled version of what you're saying is don't be afraid to ask questions,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think yes. that we are all, I also think this is slightly a product of music school, is that you're not really taught, I mean, maybe within your personal lessons, but like you're not really taught to ask questions. It's like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, or you must right. not be legitimate if that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And asking questions can be really hard because maybe you don't even know what the right question is, but maybe by just starting by asking a question that leads to the right answer that you're looking for.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. You're not going to get what you're not going to ask for. And I think people are really willing to help, especially in the arts, because I think they know that grind of going through the first 3 or 4 years and not knowing anything and also not getting paid for it, and want to alleviate that for fellow musicians and artists as much as they can. So I think people are really willing to help out.
Mm-hmm. The biggest advice I would give is don't be afraid to, I guess, kind of dirty your hands. Don't be afraid to learn new things because you will have to. Like, for example, I didn't know anything about taxes or anything like that, or marketing or finance or learning how to manage people or manage a project. I didn't know anything about that. And I think my biggest thing is don't be afraid to learn new things and don't shut out ideas that you might have because they could really lead to something else. Sometimes we get a little bit afraid of wanting to think outside the box, especially in the music mm-hmm. field. And I think it's okay to go outside that box. There's no idea that's a bad idea. Even if it seems crazy, go for it. I read this book called Creative Confidence. And my biggest takeaway from that book was that when you're coming up with creative ideas as a group together, more creativity can come out when there's less judgment, when you feel free to say what you want, when there's no idea that's too crazy. And I think that's something that maybe people can do on their own, is that there's really no idea that's too crazy and go for it. But don't be afraid to dirty mm-hmm. your hands.
On top of what both Wade and Bjorn said of ask questions, take risks, or also don't be scared to be wrong. Sometimes you could be wrong. And musicians are really confident when they don't make mistakes. And when you make mistakes, you lose it because you think you're bad. But you have to make mistakes in order to get better, right? And I mean, that's all philosophical and musical, whatever. But in the bigger scheme of things, when it's not music and administrative stuff, stuff you never learn, stuff you're learning on the fly, you could be wrong, and that's okay. Like, you have to be able to move on and don't get stuck in your pride, mm-hmm. because I think that stops a lot of people.
Totally.
And to just constantly check yourself. Don't be a jerk. Be kind. Because, again, as Bjorn was saying, you don't know who you're going to see again. And if this new journey, if you so choose this path, you have to commit and you have to be ready to face anything, and you might have to swallow some hard stuff. And it's, I have to be okay with it, but you know that there are a lot of people that are there for you and encouraging you to move forward, because no one else is going to do it.
Right. Well, thanks for all that advice, and thanks for sharing what is the bottom of the iceberg that people don't see, and they only see the concert, which is the little tip of the iceberg, right? Again, with the like winter theme going on here.
Excellent. Nice.
Also, congratulations for all your hard work and effort put into 10th Wave. And I will always be happy to be a help in any way if I can, especially with a cello in my hands. So
we always have a spot for you, Patty. Don't you worry.
Okay.
You asked for it. We've got a lot of work that needs to get done.
No, you're coming. Okay. Where can we find more about 10th Wave?
I think...
What's our social media handles?
Oh, crap. 10th Wave Music, right?
You guys!
Yeah, Ashley is not here. Ashley's okay, our okay, social okay, media okay, person. She's not here.
Well, you can find our information officially at 10thwave.org. So 10thwave.org. That's our place where we would have the most updates of concerts and such. And we do have an Instagram and Facebook at 10th Wave Music. And you can check our YouTube. We have some virtual concerts from the COVID times. So from the spring, we have a couple pretty fantastic concerts that we have a part of that we were able to get permission from the composers or publisher that we can leave it up on YouTube. So please check those out, because the camera work and the recording, those were all done professionally, and we wanted to replicate a concert experience, but from the comfort of your home.
And I should just plug that particular concert. The sound editing was from past guest Eric Romani. So how we're all interconnected here, the network of great people in town.
He's pretty awesome.
Okay. I realized I must ask the FAQ question, how did you get your name?
So the way that we kind of came up with this name was that we wanted this group to be limitless. We wanted to have the possibility to do whatever we wanted. Again, kind of expanding on the idea that any idea is okay, and there's no idea that is wrong. Mm-hmm. And kind of within that line, we were looking at the different dimensions. So you had kind of had the third dimension, fourth dimension, fifth dimension. The 10th dimension is the one where theoretically anything is possible. So that's kind of mm-hmm. where we came up with the 10th part. And then Wave was kind of a call to kind of a new movement, so to speak, that we wanted to create of classical music, where we kind of broke down the boundaries of a traditional concert experience, where we brought in new elements of what a concert is. I think it also spoke to where we are located in Minnesota, where we have a lot of mm-hmm. lakes, and Wave was kind of water themed. So kind of a three-layer part name to 10th Wave.
Got you. All right. So what are your guys' holiday plans?
Well, we're just hoping to spend a lot of time with family and friends. My family's very Scandinavian, so most Christmases we have my whole mom's side of the family over and do a big Scandinavian meal on Christmas Eve, and then have a pretty low-key, relaxing Christmas morning.
Is this Elia's first Christmas?
Second Christmas.
Second Christmas.
Oh, I was like, I can't Almost. Remember. Okay.
She'll probably remember this one a little more than last year, though.
Yeah. So she's not old enough yet. Are you guys doing Santa at all?
Yeah. She learned how to say Santa. Okay. It sounds like Danta, but she can say Santa.
Nice.
So she knows Danta and Grogu.
She knows Danta and Grogu.
That's right.
And Peppa Pig, right. Of course.
Praise be Peppa Pig. We have family here, so it'll probably be a big gathering. Hopefully the virus won't make too many anxieties pop up, but we'll do it safely. It's just a straight up traditional, but just spending time with friends and fam.
Nice.
We might go to Chicago because Richardson's parents are flying back to Jakarta after Christmas. Mm-hmm. So might go over there for a little bit. But they're flying out from Chicago. So.
Okay. It's like, yeah. It's not a like vacation away from them or something. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day. And it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hidden Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/HiddenMusicStand. Our social media handle for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is at Hidden Music Stand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, hiddenmusicstand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize the piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. Thank you all for joining me today, and I hope you guys have a wonderful holiday season. And do you guys not want to play Mario Kart?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, let's kart.
Let's do it. Okay. All right.
Thanks, Patty.
Yeah, happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Take care.
Sushi, say happy holidays.
Oh, I'm sorry. This isn't Spitfire. Sorry.
It is Spitfire.
Oh, okay.
Wait, am I going right after?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, you did it way too. Waylee, that was perfect. There's nothing wrong with that. That's exactly what I wanted.
Sorry.
Why are you sorry? You should be sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I was, I thought you were going to do all Waylee first.
No, we're going to do it. Like, okay. Okay, let's start over. Let's just start over.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't know you were done. I thought you were done.
Do you want me to do that over? I think it's hilarious, though.
No, it's okay.
Keep it. Keep it.
Sorry.
Keep it.
You give her, like, half a drink, and here she goes.
No, I'm fine. I just don't know when you're editing stuff.
That's fine. Hopefully, maybe with this new, this new wave of so many organizations trying to. Are you laughing
no.
at me?
No. New wave.
I know. I said it and I was like, oh God, it's just. I can re-say what I was saying.
No, sorry. Good. I didn't mean to ruin it.
We're done, I guess. Okay. Yay!
Say bye, Sushi.
Well, not yet. That's what I'm gonna use at the very beginning of this episode.
How about the middle one?
True fan, Ari Samira. By the way, I don't know.